questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir. And then we have some, as I mentioned, general principles mentioned in the Noble Book of Quran. One of them is the verse 23 of chapter Ash-Shura. قُلْ لَا أَسْأَلَكُمْ عَلَيْهِ أَجْرًا إِلَّا الْمَوَدَّةَ فِي الْقُرْبَى. Say, yes. I do not ask of you any reward for it, for the mission of the Prophet,
yes,
except the love of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam. And for sure, I mean, the love for the Ahlul Bayt and the love of the Prophet has different manifestations.
Yes.
And one of them is that we need to be happy when they are happy, mm-hmm, and we need to be sad when they are sad.
One of the signs, in fact, is that, for example, when the Ahlul Bayt are sad, and we know that the greatest mourner for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam now is Imam As.
Exactly.
So he is holding such mourning, we can say, sessions for him. So if we love Imam As, we have to be like him.
Now, imagine you, for example, as a boy, you love a girl, and that girl, I mean, she has, she is sad for any reason. Does she accept from you to show your happiness in front of her? Of course not. One of the reasons that proved your love toward her is that when she is sad, you need to be sad, because of her sadness.
That's right.
So, as Muslims, this Quranic verse is asking us for love for the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam. And all people agree that one of the signs for this love is that when they are happy, we need to be happy. When they are sad, we need to be sad.
Yes.
And which sadness is greater than the sadness for the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, alayhi wasalam, and the tragedy of Karbala? There are many narrations in this regard.
That's right.
For example, Imam Ali, alayhi wasalam, says that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has chosen for us some Shia who help us, وَيَفْرَحُونَ لِفَرَحِنَا وَيَحْزَنُونَ لِحُزْنِنَا. They are happy because of our happiness, and they are sad because of our sadness and grief.
That's right.
And Imam Rida alayhi salam told the son of Shabib that if you want to be with us in paradise, then وَفْرَحْ لِفَرَحِنَا. Be happy because of our happiness, and
that's
be
right,
sad when we are sad. So this is one of the principles in the Noble Book of Quran, the fact that we need to love the Ahlul Bayt, and one of the manifestations of this love is to mourn for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam because of the sadness of the progeny of the Imam. The other verse in this regard is verse 32 of chapter Al-Hajj. The verse reads, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وَمَنْ يُعَزِّمْ شَعَائِرَ اللَّهِ فَإِنَّهَا مِنْ تَقْوَى الْقُلُوبِ.
Yes.
Those people who respect the signs of Allah or venerate the sacraments, then surely it is the outcome of the piety of the hearts. Now, we have the concept of ta'zim sha'airillah.
Yes.
To venerate, to respect the signs of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, there are many discussions about this concept, to venerate
Allah
and sha'airillah.
Yes.
And the scholars believe that whatever shows that you are, helping the people remember God.
Mm-hmm.
This is a sign of God.
Yes.
So,
and Nahzat al-Husayni, as a result, is a sign of the manifestation of divinity of Allah.
Exactly.
Okay. Yes.
So, for sure, this verse is including all the actions which help the religion of God to be revived.
Okay.
And every year, practically speaking, we see that, that the mourning ceremonies for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam increase the piety of the people.
The spirituality
of the people. Okay. And one of the reasons is that the statistics show that, less sins are committed by the people, for example, especially during the first 10 days of Muharram.
And the month of Ramadan.
The communities which these sessions are held.
Yes.
So this is, a reality that mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam is one of the ways through which we can do the ta'zim, the veneration of the sha'air Allah, the signs and sacraments.
And the people find a kind of unity and conformity, among each other, wearing black, giving endowment or their nuzurat for the sake of him, helping the poor And you know, all in all, we could find this is Sha'ir Allah, you
exactly.
know.
Exactly. I mean, okay. What happens in these majalis is yes. that people come to learn the religion from the scholars.
From
this
the scholars.
Is one of the, important parts of every morning session yes. for Imam al-Hussein alayhi
salam. Yes, that's right.
I mean, religious scholars come to talk to people about God, about the Quran, mm-hmm. about the spirituality, and of course about the uprising of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So through these sessions, people increase yes. their connection to God.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Let me share an interesting story which Very happened good. To me today. I was in a marketplace and I found two teens talking to each other. They were talking about, having some, illegal relations to some girls.
Okay.
And one of them said to the other, I heard that this is the month of Muharram. Let's do it after the month of Muharram.
Okay.
This is a reality. I mean, for many people, they stop committing sin during okay. the holy month of Ramadan. This okay. happens in almost all the okay. Muslim communities. The same is happening, especially for the Shia, during the month of Muharram and Safar, and especially the first 10 days of Muharram, because of the fact that these sessions help the people remember God again.
Mm-hmm.
Why in the holy month of Ramadan people feel a kind of...
commitments to their religious
exactly.
background, or at least they do not do sinning or committing sin in public.
Yeah.
Okay, they
and
do not do
the
that.
The same
okay.
is happening in these majalis for Imam al-Hussein
yes.
alayhi
okay.
salam, because the scholars talk about God, talk about the Day of Judgment, talk about the religion, the Quran, and so on and so forth, and the religious duties of the people.
That's right.
So we shouldn't think of it as a kind of innovation. As I mentioned, it is mentioned explicitly okay. in many narrations. It is mentioned explicitly in the case of Yaqub, and implicitly in the verse of Mawaddat fil Qurba, in the verse of Ta'zim Sha'air Allah, and
yes.
also the verse 148 of chapter An-Nisa,
yes.
لا يحب الله الجهر بالسوء من
yes.
القول إلا من ظلم. We do not have time. You know,
you are not allowed to shout unless it is against a kind of oppression.
Exactly.
Okay, and for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, we are shouting for justice.
Exactly.
We are shouting in his morning
Thank
ceremonies.
Thank you for
okay.
that okay. summary. Yeah.
Increasing our voice for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the oppressions that were done toward him. That's all right. All in all, we could say that we can say reviving the memories of Nahzat al-Husseini is in the same path of Sha'ir Allah, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept whether Azadari or morning ceremonies for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam have Quranic roots or proofs or not. It was very kind of you.
My pleasure.
And thank you very much, dear listeners. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi aman Allah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
A diverse range of programs Spirituality Youth, Eastern Tales, Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
Islam my deen.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to your favorite program, Youth Station. I'm your host, Zainab, and I have with me my co-host, dear Asma. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
How are you?
Now that I'm with you, I'm just fine.
Asma, are we today's youth?
Well, no. I am happily going
youth?
To sign out for this proclamation that I'm a classical youth.
Or like traditional youth.
Mm-hmm.
How does it differ with the modern youth?
Modern youth are just, I don't know, I usually think...
Pretty much more than us.
No, not just like that, you know. I think they are very much different. I don't know if it's safe to call it this way. I don't want to just do injustice to some of the youth. But the youth that I'm seeing right now around me, they're so materialistic.
Okay.
And unfortunately, some of them are so superficial.
Yeah.
And they did not dig deep. They did not study too much. They just go for the beauties of life and the pleasures. And they do not care about what is beyond. You know what I mean?
Yes, I
That's the conception of modern youth that I have in my brain. And if this is the bad point about them, I have some good points as well. For example, they might be more active than the older generations. But still, those things that I talked about, the points of the modern youth,
mm-hmm.
has always, you know, put me in a side that I feel like...
You do not want to be a part of modern youth.
Yeah.
When you see them, you look at them.
I hardly don't. What has changed in them?
I think the world around them, mm-hmm. the things that are being fed to them.
The speed.
I think the time was running all the time the same way. There's no fast forward in time. There's no...
Yes, Zainab, there is. And the internet has changed everything. There is much of a speed in your life. Now, it's no longer like 20 years earlier, like 50 years earlier. And now I'm not talking about 200 years earlier. But if you consider now with the... previous years, I would say that in past, maybe we had more of time to sit in a corner and ponder on the beauties of life, on nature, and on the meaning of different things that are very much important, and they are considered to be the essence and the core of life.
Yeah.
But right now, as they just...
So you believe like time is running fast right now, and I had a little difference of opinion. Mm-hmm. And what was that? I'll talk on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
I'm your host, Zainab, and I have with me my co-host, Asma, and we're talking about modern youth and, as Asma said, classical or old youth. And she actually puts herself in the category of old youth. She doesn't want to be a part
with
of
all
modern
the pleasure.
Youth.
I talked about the points regarding the modern youth, and I was asking you about the good points, if you have any.
I don't find many, but there are still a lot of youth who have access to internet, who have access to more knowledge, and they're applying it in a very beautiful way.
Yeah, that also is a thing.
They're more creative.
Yes,
they're more creative at a very early age. They're more into research, more into different things. However, the internet world has kept them captivated into the fantasy world.
Double check to the word captivated.
And they have basically, you know, they really have captivated them.
Yeah,
and
they're just like prisoners, Zainab.
Kept them very away from the real life. So since our youth today is actually a bit deviated from the real life, they have a gap. They have a big gap with the real life. They can do a lot of things on social media, or they can chat with a lot of people. But when it comes to real life meetings, they cannot even utter a single word.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's again one of the bad points. I would say that's a good
point.
You
know,
but there are many youth who have used it in a better way.
Yeah.
Who know how to communicate maturely. Who know how to communicate in a much better way. Who learn from internet and stuff. So there are many modern youth who are actually learning from whatever the resources they have. But unfortunately, many of them are same prisoners.
Yeah. And remember when we talked about metaverse and we said that there would come a day in which every single person is going to have a private zone in a parallel world?
Yeah.
I would like to call it like a shell. This is what has happened to human beings generally. And since we're talking about the youth, I would say that internet has made youth captivated and prisoners in a small room of themselves, you know,
in their own
world. Yeah, in their own world.
And unfortunately, each and every one of them is being hacked.
Yeah,
because their screens differ, and they don't even realize this, and they're less educated on that. Well,
so when they take their cell phones in their hands, or when they are just so much busy with their computers.
Or communicating with others, actually providing their information to get leaked.
They are losing the seconds
security.
Of their lifetime.
True.
Now, forget about security. The lifetime is just running.
Yeah.
And they are unaware of it. They could have been writers. They could have been great thinkers, philosophers, whatsoever, even poets.
You remind me of a joke. There was a joke going viral on the internet that was saying that a person who works very, very hard from morning to evening realizes how the time passed, but a person who is stuck in his mobile does not even realize how a year passed.
Yeah,
and
that's
very
true.
We can talk more on that note after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio. With me, my co-host Asma, and we're talking about the differences between modern youth and traditional youth. So Asma, what was the good thing about traditional youth?
The good thing about traditional youth?
You consider yourself to be a part of traditional youth.
Yes. Well, they go through too much of a studying books. They are mostly bibliophiles. They are interested in reading. They do too much of thinking. They go to nature. They spend time with their dear ones.
Stopping over here that they read a lot of books.
Yeah.
Why don't modern youth do that?
Because they think internet has provided everything for them. And when you can get everything you want at the moment you want it just by pressing a button, then why do you have to go?
Have you seen a modern youth who is watching a video on internet and it's, for example, say more than 10 minutes and they just scroll down, they don't want to see it?
Yeah,
because they want it fast, they want it now.
Yes,
and this is the problem, because reading books is not very fast, it's not now, it requires your intellect.
It requires your attention. Yes, it requires yes. reasoning and logic.
Your brain has to be engaged.
And internet has been designed in a way it does not allow you to go for more logic, more reasoning. You want it fast. You want it now happening.
Yeah, that's very true. As I just told you, their connection with nature was more and more.
Because they were not living in the fantasy world.
Exactly, yeah. They had more respect
They were
nature.
Not living in the digital world, I must say.
Mm-hmm.
Because fantasies have always been there.
I am not a fan of digital world, you know? That's why I call myself old-fashioned. What about you? Which one do you consider yourself? An old-fashioned one or a modern one?
I really don't want to be the part of this modern youth.
See?
Yeah, you know why? Because I think they're least responsible.
Yeah.
How much responsible?
And the respect, Zeyna.
I mean, the traditional youth had been responsible, mm-hmm. respecting, recognizing yeah. their roles.
Mm-hmm.
Much more.
We were just talking about respect. When I consider the youth right now around me, when their parents or even their grandfathers, grandmothers are talking to them, they did not pay too much of attention or respect, or not just that, for every single topic, I don't see them very much respectful.
You know why that happened?
Why?
Because the modern world is actually, the so-called modern world, I must yeah. say, is teaching us the everyday, these slogans, these hashtags, these placards going on. It's mm-hmm. my life, my choice. When you say my life, my choice kind of things, you become extremely self-centric.
Yeah.
You are not responsible anymore. You don't feel any responsibility towards even your parents or anyone else. Because you're being taught constantly
Think about yourself and your benefits.
Be self-centric.
Yeah.
Be self-centric. Be selfish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Indirectly, that's what's being taught. So since we are being taught indirectly that, we are less responsible today. Or we see youth coming up very, very less responsible or very, very self-centric kind mm-hmm. of youth or very much thinking about themselves. Important thing that I really hate about modern youth, or I must say most of the women, especially most of the females, is that they're putting a lot of attention on their body image.
Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, just look at it. Did you see traditional youth going for mm-hmm. surgeries just to look beautiful?
Now, well, you know,
was the looks that really mattered?
There is no problem with doing surgeries, you know, because some of the people, that was an improvement.
See, until and unless you don't
science.
Have burns on your body, you yeah. have not met an accident.
Yeah.
You are not required
we actually
to go
are
for
talking
unnecessary
of-
just to show off in this materialistic world wherein you're supposed to kind of be very much modest, you're kind of supposed to be less visible as a female. But here, the world is teaching you, no, you should have a model-like figure,
yeah.
which is not possible, which mm-hmm. is not, because the research says 99% of it is not actually possible.
You know, the gist of it is that the beauty is no longer deep skin.
Exactly.
So it came out to be on the surface.
Yes.
Just what I told you. They have become so superficial. If you are not just going like the crowd, if you're not moving like the entire current, then you no longer belong to these people. So that's it. We were talking about modern youth.
Modern youth and traditional youth. So yeah. the modern youth today, whether we are part of it or not, we should try to stick to some good qualities from the traditional
exactly.
ones and also learn from the very modern things that we have, accessories we have. Use them in a better way, basically, because everything that we are concluding over here is because a user-dependent thing, the access to technology
yeah.
that we have, it's all user-dependent, so it's the way you use it. So use tech in the best possible way, educate yourself, increase your mm-hmm. knowledge, and read books.
Yeah.
Well, with that, just analyze all these things, just analyze the things that we talked about, traditional youth, and compare that we talked about the modern youth, and just keep yourself in the frame, which frame you belong to. Do you belong to modern youth, or you want to be a part of traditional youth? As Asma and me, we want to stick to traditional
exactly.
ones. Well, thank you so much, Asma, for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. Experts are saying an 80% price cap increase will plunge British people into destitution and cause an increase in avoidable deaths without urgent government support. We have prepared for you an article written jointly by Richard Partington, Rowena Mason and Alex Lawson. The piece is titled Rising Energy Bills Put Millions of UK Households at Risk of Winter Catastrophe. Millions of British households are bracing for a winter catastrophe of rising energy bills that experts say will plunge people into destitution and cause an increase in avoidable deaths without urgent government support. After Britain's energy industry regulator confirmed an 80% rise in the consumer price cap from October that will take a typical household's gas and electricity bill to £3,549 a year, there were stark warnings about its potentially devastating effects. Charities said the rise would completely wipe out the incomes of poorest households, leaving millions of people with a threat of bills that they cannot pay or the choice between heating and eating this winter. Highlighting the damage to whole sections of the population, analysts at the Joseph Rantree Foundation said single parents will be forced to hand over almost two-thirds of their income after housing costs to pay energy bills. They said the poorest single adults would see their finances wiped out by stratospheric energy bills representing 120% of their income after housing costs, leaving many destitute. Condemning inaction by British ministers, the consumer champion Martin Lewis warned lives will be lost this winter. The latest rise announced by Ofgem highlighted once again a power vacuum at the heart of government as ministers await the conclusion of the race to replace Boris Johnson as leader of the Conservative Party. The Conservatives were in disarray over the response to the price cap on Friday, 26th of August, which will mean typical bills will have trebled from a year earlier. Nadeem Zahawi, the Chancellor, suggested people should think about reducing their energy use, but his likely successor, Kwasi Kwarteng, said he was opposed to giving such advice to consumers. Liz Truss, the frontrunner to be Britain's next Prime Minister, also refused to spell out what she would do to help households beyond saying that she would ensure people got the support that they needed, even though Boris Johnson told broadcasters that the next government would plainly have to increase cash handouts. The price cap was raised to £1,277 last October and now stands at just under £2,000 after increases this spring. The Russia-Ukraine conflict further added to a dramatic global increase in wholesale oil and gas prices. Peter Matejek, the chief analyst at the Joseph Rantry Foundation, said of the October increase, "In all of my years as an analyst, I haven't double-checked a piece of analysis as much as this one, because it is so staggering, it feels incorrect." He said, "It is impossible to think a care worker or a shop assistant will have to scramble to find hundreds more pounds to pay for their heating bills, or that the entirety of someone's income for a whole year will be less than their energy bills." Criticising this trust for failing to come up with a plan to tackle catastrophic energy price rises, consumer champion Martin Lewis told BBC Radio 4's Today programme, "If we do not get further government intervention on top of what was announced last May, then lives will be lost this winter." The announcement comes as households attempt to budget for a tough winter, with inflation already above 10%, driving the soaring cost of food in shops and record petrol prices at the pump. The Bank of England has forecast the latest rise in energy bills this winter will send inflation to a peak above 13%, while some economies forecast it could climb as high as 18% from January. The next cap will be introduced in January. The energy consultancy firm Cornwall Insight on Friday 26th of August raised its forecast for that announcement to £5,387 from a previous prediction of £4,650, and increased its estimate for the April cap to £6,616, up from £5,341. Combined with forecasts for next January, the Resolution Foundation said bills will set to be about £2,277 higher than last year, at £3,749, extra money, it said, people cannot afford. Torsten Bell, the chief executive of the think tank, said winter energy bills are set to average around £500 a month, while prepayment customers will need to find over £700, more than half of their disposable income, to keep the heating on in January alone. Those costs pose a serious threat to families' physical and financial health. Ofgem said it would not give projections for the January measure because the market remains too volatile, but warned prices could significantly become worse through 2023. The new cap will affect 24 million households, about 85% of the population. That number includes about 4.5 million prepayment meter customers who will pay on average an additional £59 a year. Jonathan Brearley, the chief executive of Ofgem, told Channel 4 News on Friday night, 26th of August, "The regulator had to make difficult trade-offs in setting the new price cap." Jonathan Brearley, the chief executive of Ofgem, said, "It was designed to do one thing, and that was to make sure that unfair profits aren't charged by those companies that buy and sell energy. And right now, those profits in that market are 0%. Jonathan Brearley added, "What it can't do is it can't say, given the cost of the energy, that we can force companies to get from customers less than it costs to buy the energy that they need, because otherwise they simply can't buy the energy for those customers."
This is A to Z. an introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, methods of respecting. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of methods of respecting in Islamic lifestyle. When we see the human life, we see that the human being or the mankind has relations with different people, and on the basis of those relations, they deal or they socialize with the people. And sometimes we have our relatives next to us, our close relatives like mother, brother, sister, son, daughter. These are the close ones. On the second hand, we have our neighbors who are living next to us. On the third number, when we go to the work, we have colleagues with whom we work, the manager or the general colleagues. Therefore, our socializing depends on the way of connection that we have these with these people. And the first thing that comes to our mind, that how should or which methods should I acquire in order to respect the others? Up to what extent can I respect the others? There are no such rules, but there are many things that are said, and there are different ways. For example, it is said to respect the others while you in your speech when you talk. But on the other hand, if we want to know that what to do and what is the main criteria, what are the limits of respecting others, we have a saying from one of the greatest scholars who is known as Shahid Thani, who said that it is permissible to respect to a believer as much as it is customary. As much as it is customary. So we need to look at the custom of a place. For example, in one place they shake hand. On the other place, they hug each other when they meet. There must be some other customs. Therefore, we should do those customs in the limits of Islam. And if it is in within the limits of Islam, it is allowable. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of methods of respect in the Islamic lifestyle. We said that Shahid Thani has said that it is permissible to bow to a believer or the respect to a believer as much as it is customary, and it depends on the customs. Therefore, we need to apply or we need to respect others according to the customs that are in that place, but in the limits of Islam. For example, if Islam has stopped us from shaking hands with non-mahram, we should not perform that, even if it is the custom of the others. Rather, we can lower our heads, or with the respect, we can say hello or something like that, and we reply them. But it should be in the premises or the limitations of the Islam. It should be in the boundaries of Islam. The first method, which is being said in the Islamic teachings, is that you must respect others through your speech. Because first thing, when we see each other, we talk to each other. We move our lips and tongue. And with this speech, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said, وَقُولُوا لِلنَّاسِ حُسْنًا. Talk to the people in a good manner. Talk to the people in a good manner. Even if for the Musa alayhi salam, when he was going to confront the Pharaoh of his time, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, قُلْ لَهُمَا قَوْلًا كَرِيمًا. Talk with them in a merciful way. Talk to them in a good way, so that he comes towards you. When you're talking to your parents, Allah says, it is the teachings of Ahlul Bayt, that قُلْ لَهُمَا, say to both of them, كَرِيمًا, قَوْلًا كَرِيمًا, in an honorable way you must talk to your parents. You must not shout in front of your parents. So it depends. The person that you're socializing, the person you're communicating with, you need to talk to them in that way. And when we are talking with the needy, those who raise their hand, those who are in need, Allah says that فَقُلْ لَهُمْ قَوْلًا مَيْسُورًا. Talk with them in a respectful way, so they are not feeling being humiliated. So talk with them in a respectful way and refuse them with respect if you do not have anything to help them. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en/call-of-islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with Friday prayer leaders from across the country in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on July 27, 2022.
The people's presence is the foundation. When we recite words remembering Allah in a group, the effects and blessings of it descend upon the group. In the Quran, it is stated that, "For admonition indeed benefits the faithful." The Quran, Surah 51, verse 55. Everyone benefits from it. Yes, even when you pray the night prayer in solitude in your room, the Almighty Allah will still bestow its benefits on you. But here, during the Friday prayer, this benefit is a public benefit. Everyone benefits from it. Or consider the verse, "Remember me and I will remember you." The Quran, Surah 2, verse 152. "I will remember you." This special grace from God is a result of dhikr. Dhikr here is remembering God in a group. So the grace that is granted is for the whole group. Or, "And remember Allah greatly so that you may be felicitous." The Quran, Surah 8, verse 45. And many of the verses that are in the Quran. I referred to Al-Mu'jam Al-Mufahras, Quranic Index. And these few verses came to mind for now, which I've written down. If you search, there are plenty of verses that talk about the blessings that dhikr brings. This is one feature, the collective remembrance of Allah and its blessings.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The next feature is the continuity of this event, these weekly meetings. Well, the Hajj pilgrimage is once in a person's lifetime. That's how it usually is. But this Friday prayer is a weekly event. This is very important. As far as I am aware, and I've done some research on this, there is no other spiritual gathering in any religion, in any place, where the people of a city or a large group of people in a city gather in a central place together on a weekly basis. What the content of this gathering should be constitutes the next issue. This is a very important feature. This is where the excellence of this gathering becomes evident, even in comparison to Hajj. It takes place one week after another. This week, next week, the week after that, and so on. Well, this is an example of what we read in Dua Kumail, so that my works and litanies may all be a single litany, and my occupation with your service everlasting. It's continuous. It's not a matter of being there one day and absent the next, or being present in one place but not being present somewhere else. I need to be continually at your service, and my occupation with your service everlasting. This is how this weekly gathering is. This is how my occupation with your service everlasting can be carried out.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
In the limelight.
The UK government's strategy to tackle sewage discharges is a cruel joke, critics have said, after ministers laid out plans to stop the pollution. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's environment reporter Helena Horton. The piece is titled, UK government's sewage spills strategy is cruel joke, say critics. The British government's strategy to tackle sewage discharges is a cruel joke, critics have claimed, after ministers laid out plans to stop the pollution. George Eustace, the Environment Secretary, announced that water companies would have to invest £56 billion over the next 25 years into a long-term programme to tackle storm sewage discharges by 2050. This investment will be used to increase the capacity of companies' networks and treat sewage before it is discharged to protect public health and prevent pollution, while also reducing all discharges. Failure to meet these targets, the government said, could lead to firms facing substantial fines or having to return money to customers. However, critics say these payments will end up being put on customers' bills and force the public to pay as chief executives continue to receive large bonuses. Under government plans, by 2035, water companies will have to improve all storm overflow discharging into or near every designated bathing water and improve 75% of overflow discharging to high priority nature sites. By 2050, this will apply to all waterways. But according to analysis of the proposals by the Liberal Democrats, by 2030, there will still be 325,000 sewage dumps a year on Britain's beaches, as well as in lakes, rivers and chalk streams. The Liberal Democrats' environment spokesperson Tim Farron said, "This government's plan is a license to pump sewage onto our beaches and in our treasured rivers and lakes. By the time these flimsy targets come into effect, our beaches would have been pumped full of disgusting sewage, more otters will be poisoned, and our children will still be swimming in dangerous waters. This is a cruel joke. The government is going to hike water bills to pay for cleaning up the mess made by water companies. The same companies who awarded their executives multi-million pound bonuses this year and paid out over £1 billion to their shareholders, while they roll in the cash, we swim in sewage. The whole thing stinks." The government has said that under its plan, bills will not go up until 2025. Sources also said they would not allow companies to profit from environmental damage. Annual bonuses paid to water company executives rose by 20% in 2021, despite most of the firms failing to meet sewage pollution targets. Figures show that on average, executives received £100,000 in one-off payments on top of their salaries during a period in which foul water was being pumped for 2.7 million hours into England's rivers and swimming spots. George Eustace, the Environment Secretary, said this is the first government to take action to end environmental damage caused by sewage spills. "We will require water companies to protect everyone who uses our water for recreation and ensure storm overflows pose no threat to the environment. Water companies will need to invest to stop unacceptable sewage spills onto our rivers and coastlines, and these can have greater protection than ever before." Jim McMahon, the Shadow Environment Secretary, said, "Instead of governing, it's clear that the Conservatives have taken up writing fiction, as this document is neither a plan nor does it eliminate sewage dumping into our natural environment. Under the government's weak improvement target, based on last year's data, we'd face another 4.8 million sewage spill events in our country between now and 2035. Last year, Tory MPs had the opportunity to vote meaningful action into law, but blocked measures that would have progressively eliminated the discharge of raw sewage in our natural environment. Britain deserves better than a zombie Tory government that is happy for our country to be treated as an open sewer. Labour will use the levers of power to hold reckless water bosses to account legally and financially, and toughen regulations to prevent them from gaming the system. Stuart Singleton White, head of the campaigns at the Angling Trust, said, "Department of the Environment, DEFRA's claim, these are the strictest targets ever for water companies. Sounds impressive. It isn't, and the government knows that it is a weak plan that falls short of what is needed. What's more, this plan falls short of the commitments made in the Environment Act and fails to take on board the recommendations of its own Storm Overflow Task Force. This is a government trying to spin its way out of a problem it only sees as needing to manage from a public relations perspective. Our rivers and coastlines are paying the price for this complacency, and the public are angry."
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The Saudi Lidwo on Yemen is still taking its toll on the nation, even under the UN brokered truce. Yemen's Ministry of Health has held a press briefing in Sana'a to highlight the catastrophic repercussions of the Saudi aggression and the impact of the ongoing siege of Yemen.
We held this press conference to review the impact of the Saudi aggression since its beginning, as well as the aftermath of the siege amid the UN armistice, which unfortunately did not change anything. There are tragedies caused by the Saudi-led coalition throughout the years of war, as health facilities and workers have been targeted, and we explain to the world what is happening in our country under the eyes of the United Nations and with the support of the US, Britain and the rest of major powers.
The ministry says the ongoing Saudi blockade is threatening the lives of thousands of patients by preventing them from traveling for treatment and blocking medical supplies from entering the country.
The blockade is part of the fierce war on Yemen and has directly affected the health sector due to a lack of fuel and failure to fully open the Sana'a International Airport. There are more than 32,000 patients who urgently need to travel abroad for treatment. Saudi Arabia also tends to prevent the entry of medicines that are essential for the treatment of millions, including radioactive iodine, which is used to treat cancer patients.
Even though the United Nations managed to declare a nationwide ceasefire back in April, it has failed to relieve the humanitarian situation in Yemen, as Saudi Arabia is still imposing restrictions on all sorts of imports into the country.
According to health officials, 19 million Yemenis don't have access to basic health care services. They say the United Nations is concentrating its efforts on the Russia-Ukraine war, while it should also put more efforts into Yemen to save the lives of millions of women and the children.
Monsoon rains are still pounding Pakistan, hampering all sorts of communications in key cities and towns in four provinces of the country. Roads, houses, hotels and buildings, along with other infrastructures, have been washed away by the flood waters. Southwestern Balochistan and northwestern Khyber Pakhtunkhwa provinces are now in the spotlight due to the sheer magnitude of devastation witnessed there in recent days. That's while millions of Pakistanis ravaged by extreme flooding are still awaiting relief in remote rural areas.
As far as government support is concerned, I think they supported only 50%. A lot of complaints from the local communities that there is no support received so far from the government. They are demanding shelters, food items, and a lot of other things.
Across large swaths of Pakistan, houses, schools, roads, and bridges have been destroyed. Floods also left thousands displaced and struggling to find safety along with their livestock. Meanwhile, Shehbaz Sharif has visited the heavily affected areas. He has already appealed to the international community to send aid and relief to help them deal with the devastation.
We are doing our best to help flood-affected people. The 30-year record of monsoon has been broken this year. The situation is demanding that we all should rise above the politics and to help the flood victims to overcome their miseries.
Pakistan is 8 on the Global Climate Risk Index for being one of the most vulnerable countries in the face of extreme weather caused by climate change. The country witnessed more rain than ever recorded this monsoon season.
It has been a year since the U.S. missile withdrawal from Afghanistan and the Taliban takeover of the country. During the pullout, thousands of Afghans flocked to airports in hope of leaving the country alive.